All right. Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. Yeah. And I sound a lot happier than I am right now. I'm really, really pressed because I keep looking at what the hell is going on in the world.
Just in the last week, we've been seeing Trump, who has repeatedly threatened North Korea already, talking about fire and fury. He's putting the entire world in the crosshairs of nuclear war. Yes, we're living in a world where a fascist has his finger on the nuclear button. Then came Charlottesville. Groups of white supremacists roved through Charlottesville, Virginia. They launched physical attacks on people, and one of them rammed a car into a crowd of people, killing Heather Heyer and seriously injuring a number of others. So, at the back end of the show, we're going to hear from Andy Z, co-initiator of Refuse Fascism, about November 4th, this nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. We'll be hearing listener calls in this part of the show as well, but since it's pre-recorded, those of you listening now will not be able to call in. But to begin the show, I'm going to play an interview I did with Carl Dix, a representative of the Revolutionary Communist Party and a co-initiator of Refuse Fascism.
On Saturday, August 12th, armed white supremacists ran rampant in Charlottesville, Virginia, or at least they tried to. They were put on the run by unarmed counter-demonstrators until one of these cowardly dogs ran a car into the protesters, killing one and injuring many more. Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party was in Charlottesville all this last weekend, and he's joining us now to talk about what happened. Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on, Michael.
Yeah, definitely, man. Now, you were in Charlottesville this weekend. What did you see? What happened?
Look, what happened is that white supremacist thugs descended on Charlottesville from different parts of the country, came into the street, as you said, armed, and letting, just spewing white supremacist poison, marching through the streets, waving Confederate flags, holding shields with Nazi symbols on them, and telling people, we're getting the oven started up for you all, especially pointing out black people, hurling the N-word at them, but also spewing a lot of misogynist, woman-hating stuff at any woman who was out in the streets in opposition to them, as well as slurs at LGBTQ people. So this is the horror that was in the streets, and it's why I went there, but also why I issued a statement calling on everybody else who hates injustice to be there, because we cannot let this putrid, poisonous, white supremacist BS spew out unopposed. This is some stormtroopers being whipped up from the top, because the atmosphere that the Trump-Pence regime is whipping up is calling all of this forth, and they're being welded as shock troops for the hammering into place of fascist rule in this country. And if you sit back, try to ignore it, and don't oppose it, that can and will go down, and it will mean unimaginable horrors for humanity. I mean, Friday night, you saw these thugs marching onto the campus of the University of Virginia outside a religious gathering against white supremacy with their torches. The police stood by and watched them march in, and they were only confronted by University of Virginia students, a grouping called Students Against White Supremacy, that politically confronted them. Then on Saturday, they were going to rally in the streets. They were marching through the city. They brawled with people who challenged them politically, physically attacking people. But then as they got to their rally site, a broad array of people, different races and nationalities, different gender orientation, and a lot of young people, as well as some not so young people, were there to oppose them. And the rally got shut down. And see, this was very important, because you let this go down unopposed and it gathers steam, it builds, and it comes at you. So what happened was very important. It was inspiring, and it needs to be built off of, because it's not enough to meet them each time they come out. Because if you're on the defensive like that, then you can defend yourself into a corner. We have to actually go on the offensive around this and go to the roots of it, both in terms of the fact that it's being whipped up by this fascist Trump-Pence regime, and this regime must be gone out. In fact, it must be driven from office, and that means people got to respond to Refuse Fascism's call for November 4th and be at the organizing regional conferences that are being held this Saturday, August 19th, to prepare for them. But we also got to go all the way to the roots, because this white supremacy and the other horrors that this regime is bringing forward did not start with Donald Trump. They're rooted into the framework and fabric of this capitalist imperialist system. And we don't want to get rid of this fascist regime in order to just go back to the regular white supremacy that America inflicts, or the regular patriarchy that America enforces, or the regular aggressive national chauvinism that it displays for humanity. We want to go through that to a future that's totally different and far better, and the way to do that is through revolution.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Carl Dix, who is a representative of the Revolutionary Communist Party, an advocate for Bob Avakian and of his new synthesis of communism. Carl is also a co-initiator of Refuse Fascism and co-founder of the Stop Mass Incarceration Network. Let me ask you this, Carl, and we're going to get back to some of the things that you've been saying. I'm going to backtrack a little bit. You know, when you look at Trump's response to all this, to what happened on Saturday and just across the board, and the way that he came in there, he looked like he was just sort of almost bored with having to break up his vacation and come out and speak to this. And he was kind of at the same time, you know, getting his little folksy stuff in after he had other stuff and sort of, you know, just dropping little hints of other things going on in the world. But in the main, what he did was just so outrageous when he talked about the hatred on all sides, the equivalency between the Nazis and the demonstrators. And even when he talked about the woman, oh, no, that's right, Heather Heyer, who was killed by one of these Nazis, wasn't even mentioned by Trump. And when you look about what Trump was doing in terms of his response, how do you see that in relation to what you've just been talking about?
Well, look, he came out because he felt, okay, I got to say something. But what was said was there is egregious hatred and violence on many sides. And then he underscored it by repeating on many sides. And that is an equivalence. And it really comes down to you come upon a man having attacked and attempted to rape a woman, and the woman fights back against him. You come up on him, and then you say, look, both sides are engaging in violence, and this is no good. That's a load of crap. In that case, you can see very clearly that the violence of the woman beating off this rapist is justified and good, and the violence of the rapist is what needs to be condemned. Well, here you had these fascist thugs coming together to uphold the legacy of the Confederacy, because they, even their stated reason for being there was to keep the statue of Robert E. Lee, the leader of the Confederate Army, from being removed. They were grabbing the legacy of slavery and upholding that and saying, this is the legacy of white people and we will not allow you to replace it. And see, look, the Confederacy and the enslavement of black people is a crucial part of the history of this country. It is, in fact, the foundation on which the wealth and power was created. And grabbing a hold of that, upholding it, and wanting to restore it to its rightful place is part and parcel of a program that targets black people, that aims to enforce even more savage oppression on them. And like I said, that oppression never stopped. It changed form, but it was continuing to go down. But what Trump represents is an intensification of that that would take it to horrific levels. He's not going to call that out. He's actually leading it, fighting to make it happen. Look at what his regime has done. Look at his speech on Long Island, where he called for police to be even more brutal with people that they interact with and arrest, where he talked about Chicago and sending the feds in to deal with the violence there, which will come down to enforcing the kind of clampdown that's aimed at wiping out the struggle of black people against their oppression once and for all. So that's what that represents. And even today, when he came out and at the end of a brief statement around this, referenced white nationalists and the Ku Klux Klan as included in his statement about opposing bigotry, two things came through very clear. One was that he upheld what he said Saturday. He said, what I said Saturday was right. He made that point several times. So he kept with the equivalency and then said, oh, and yes, you've dragged me to the point where I feel like I do have to include this, but I'm just going to throw it in at the end. So he's continuing to enforce that program of the intensification of the oppression of black people and brown people. And that's part and parcel of what his regime represents overall, because it goes along with the misogyny, with the attacks on immigrants, the targeting of Muslims. This program is one that's a horror for humanity. And when you look at the fact that as he's doing this, he's also threatening war on North Korea and talking about fire and fury, the likes of which the world has never known. This is a guy that's got his finger on the nuclear button. This is a regime that must be driven out. It is already visiting horrors on humanity and has unimaginably worse ones in store. But again, not driven out in order to go back to the way things were before, but to go forward through revolution to a totally different and far better world. And look, revolution is real. It's not only really needed, but it's real. We've got the leadership for this revolution in Bob Avakian, the leader of the Revolutionary Communist Party. He's taken the understanding of how to make revolution and bring into being a world without exploitation and oppression, his new synthesis of communism. And people need to get into this. They need to check his work out. They need to dig into it. They need to get into the strategy for making revolution that he's led in developing. They need to get into the Constitution for a future socialist republic in North America, which is a vision for the world that could be brought into being through revolution. And people can do all of that, as well as getting some on-the-spot coverage of what went down in Charlottesville this weekend, what went on around the country in terms of the protests in solidarity with the fight against white supremacy by going to the website revcom.us.
And people can also find a copy of your statement on that website as well and other reportage from what happened in Charlottesville. Carl, let me ask you a few other questions on this because I wanted to get into a few, couple of other things. One was actually, look, there's a point about the significance of Trump's response in terms of what's being shaped for the future. You speak to that in your statement, but it's also something I know that you've been wrestling with for a while, that there's a lot of significance in terms of what Trump's response was in relation to the kind of future that his system needs to have shape up, and that he in particular and his branch of that needs to have shape up. So let's talk about that a little.
Well, I mean, look, in relation to what the future needs to be, there were two futures being fought for in the streets in Charlottesville. You could see the outlines of a new civil war in this country. And what's driving this is not just some backward thinking on the part of some white people, although there is a lot of backward thinking on the part of a lot of white people, and you saw it in the streets in Charlottesville. But it's being driven by the needs of the capitalist imperialist system. It's being driven by the fact that this system has no future for millions and millions of black and brown people in the inner cities across the country. Their system has sucked legitimate ways to survive and raise families away from millions and millions of our youth in the inner cities. Their system has wrecked the educational system. They have left nothing there for people as far as having a legitimate, to have a future, except to get into the street life and its code of revenge and retaliation. And then they unleash their pigs to clamp down on people using the violence that their system has coerced people into getting into as justification for that. And there is a different way that things can be. This is something that we're working with people going into neighborhoods in Chicago and saying to people, you got to get out of this. You're pushed into this situation of fighting and killing each other by the conditions the system enforces, and then they use it to clamp down on you even more. You're doing what they want you to do when you get into that. You got to get out of killing each other and get into the revolution and be part of forging this new future. And there's a way for you to do that. We take to them Basics by Bob Avakian. We take video clips from Bob Avakian. And we also take, you know, the long things, Revolution Nothing Less, the talk that he gave, the dialogue he did with Cornel West on religion and revolution and religion. Because people need to get out of that and into revolution, because that's where a real future is, and they can. But they can't do it the way they are. They got to break with the system's way of thinking and take up a different way of thinking that can bring in a different future.
I just can't pass up the opportunity to throw this quote at you. Trump has said time and again over the last, since Saturday, he said, what is vital now is a restoration of law and order. And that's in the face of everything that's been going on. That's what he says. He says, what's vital now is a restoration of law and order. That's what we need to go forward. That's what we need to, you know, solve the problems we're facing. Speak to that.
Okay, we got to say, what is the law and order of this system? And it has been a law and order under which police brutalize and even murder black and brown people with impunity. And we've seen it again and again. And I mean, we have seen it because of the videos that have captured it. It's been right before our eyes that we've seen this murder carried out, and then we see the murderers walk free. It's a situation where people are forced out of their homes and to live on the street. It's an order in which people in Flint have no clean drinking water, and then they have water bills to pay for the poison water that's being sent to their house. That's the order that is being enforced by what they call law and order. And it's an order that is sucking the lives out of millions and millions of people. It's an order that is no damn good and needs to be broken through on. But that's what they're talking about. They're talking about enforcing the current conditions. And that is the role that the police play. That's the role that the criminal injustice system plays. And they want to go back to that. They want to tighten and intensify the regime of ICE agents tearing families apart by disappearing people with their deportation raids. And it's an order that is not in the interest of humanity, and we got to break from it, and it's going to take revolution to end it once and for all, and we need to drive this regime out.
Carl, one of the most moving things of this past weekend was when Heather Heyer, who was at the demonstrations and had been involved in all this, and she was there, and she got, basically, she was murdered by the Nazi that drove his car into the crowd. Let's talk about her.
Yeah, see, this is very important. And look, I'm somebody who's old enough to remember Viola Luisa. I'm probably pronouncing her name wrong. But a white woman who had gone down south to work with the civil rights workers, I believe it was in Mississippi, and she was murdered by the Klan more than 50 years ago. And so today we have Heather Heyer being murdered by one of these Nazi KKK thugs that came into the city. And we need to remember her and honor her because people were putting their lives on the line. She put her life on the line. And you knew that as you confronted these thugs, as you saw them marching with their weaponry, their shields, and all that. And we have to honor her and, from her example, learn that we have to stand up and say no to this. Because if you don't say no to it, it will steamroll all of us and all of society and humanity.
All right, Carl Dix, thank you very much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you for having me on.
All right, you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've been talking with Carl Dix, a representative of the Revolutionary Communist Party and a co-initiator of Refuse Fascism, as well as a co-founder of the Stop Mass Incarceration Network. And we've been talking about the recent clash in Charlottesville, Virginia, between rabid Nazis and the people who bravely stood up against them.
I waited all my life to play, but I still can't find a way. But if I work it one more day, I might just break the chain. I might just break the chain.
I was really pleased that I was able to talk to and get our next guest. He's a regular feature on this show, and every time he comes on, he leaves us with a lot to think about. And his name is Andy Z. He's one of the co-initiators of Refuse Fascism, and he's here to talk with us about The Nightmare Must End. This nightmare must end on November 4th, 2017. Take to the streets and public squares in cities and towns across the country, continuing day after day and night after night, not stopping until our demand is met. No, this nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. It's good to be back.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into this, man. Refuse Fascism has just issued a call for, as I was saying, a very bold and very necessary action starting on November 4th. And it's one that's eventually aimed at drawing out millions of people across the entire country, taking to the streets until the Trump-Pence regime is gone. Let's start off with you explaining what this is, its vision and its aim.
Well, I think, you know, we have to take a look at that first slogan. This nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. I don't think it's a shock or should surprise people, but actually millions of people feel this way, that it is an absolute nightmare we're living through right now. And the question is what to do about it. But I think we have to get a handle on just how serious it is that it is called a nightmare, and people think of it that way when they do think of it. You know, when we started Refuse Fascism, we said that the Trump-Pence regime is a fascist regime, that this is not insult or exaggeration. This is what it is. And we said then, this is back in December, for the future of humanity and the planet, we, the people, must drive this regime out, and that he and Pence have assembled a vicious cabal that put forward basically a full fascist program. And it said then, because Trump has his finger on the nuclear trigger, the Trump-Pence regime is more dangerous to the world than even Hitler. And here we are 6 months later, and Trump is talking about unleashing fire and fury like the world has never seen. And then to qualify his statement, he said it's not strong enough. So you can see, and we can probably get into this a bit more on North Korea, just how dangerous it is to have somebody who has got his finger on that with only, you know, only takes two people to approve a nuclear attack. But even short of a nuclear attack, what would happen should the U.S. carry out what Mattis has called a preventative war? The absolute human carnage to the people of South Korea, to the people of the world, that this would be. So that's just one of an entire program they have. And this leads us to the point that we actually have to put an end to this. And the call for November 4th is a contention and a proposal and a plan and something we're actually carrying out to do, which is the only way this could be resolved in a positive way is to drive both Trump and Pence out. And the only way that could happen is by millions of people ultimately taking to the streets and cities and towns across the country and not leaving until this demand is met. In other words, you would start off with thousands of people in key cities and hundreds and thousands in other cities around the country, and this would be a protest that would grow, you know, with different people coming out or some of the same people coming out day and night, and perhaps somewhat ironically, this is what happened last winter or beginning in November in South Korea, that after 3 or 4 months, eventually their president was removed from power. But anything short of this kind of political crisis created by the people from below is not going to yield anything good and probably won't yield any change at all. And in fact, a grave danger we face right now is that you can see that many of the Democrats, because of where they're coming from, are actually criticizing Trump's language but supporting his aims vis-a-vis North Korea. So it only is going to be with the people that we can actually stop this, and only the people acting outside of what are the normal channels will we be able to drive the entire regime out of power.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, in short, the November 4th call.
Well, yeah, and look, it's important that we actually dig into this and continue to dig into it even more, because it's actually, if you're looking at this, this is not something that's going to be, and I'm just saying this because a lot of times people think that, okay, well, everybody calls for these demonstrations, they call for demonstrations, they say they're going to do this, they say they're going to do that, but this is actually something that has many, many very heavy things focused up in it and at stake in terms of if it succeeds or not. I mean, things are not sitting still in this country and in what this beast is doing around the world. Things are not sitting still. And there is actually a point of people needing to be out there. But in a certain sense, and this action actually taking off the way that it needs to take off, that it does need to look at something like, you know, South Korea and what happened there and other places. I mean, even, and it needs to learn lessons from things like Tahrir Square that actually happened. But then again, how could that have gone further? So I think one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, right now, what do you see as the basis for this happening? When you tell people, if people look and say, look, man, I haven't seen, like, even we saw the Women's March and we saw some of the expressions around the inauguration and all, but in terms of actually the flooding of the streets, the coming to grips with things, it was really great when this stuff happened on July 15th. On the other hand, things need to be far more developed, and I think people are wondering, like, what is the basis for this?
Okay, well, the main basis for it is in what the regime itself is doing and the fact that it is a regime. You know, that's not just, again, just like calling Trump and Pence fascist isn't a rhetorical flourish. It's not hyperbole. We think it's an accurate assessment of what the program of this regime is and what they're setting out to do and what they actually have done already, which is extensive. Calling it a regime is also not just a rhetorical flourish. It's the fact that this is not just a swing of the pendulum of bad Republican policies, which, by the way, the Republican Party has been a fascist party for a long time. And yes, it's an American fascism. We can talk more about that. But this is a regime. It's an amalgam of many different strains of fascism in America that's now come behind the presidency of Donald Trump, and they came on through the course of the campaign, and much to their surprise, he became their vehicle, probably surprised a lot of them. It might even have surprised him, but then nonetheless, that's what happened. They all recognize it, and they see in Donald Trump the answer to and the way forward for the program they've wanted to institute for this country. So it, in one sense, the basis for this lies in that extreme situation, which then gives rise to the feeling among millions and tens of millions, if not 100 million people, that this is revolting. This is just, it fills them with fear, anger, anguish, the nightmare vision. And this then is the basis for this call. Now, the question then gets posed, well, how do you get from a situation where right after the inauguration, maybe about 4 million people or so came out in a women's march, ostensibly to declare who they are as women and opposed to this, but actually it was a mass outpouring in opposition to the Trump regime. But since that time, there has not been that level of struggle. And in fact, we're facing a situation now where there's this dynamic of some people still taking to the streets and still fighting, and whereas others have come to accommodate themselves to this and actually accepting the normalization of it. And indeed, they've been led to do so, which we can get into later, by the Democrats and various offshoots of the Democratic Party. But all of this could be broken through because of how extreme the situation is, because of the fact that this anger still exists, if we start preparing for the kind of action that we're calling for. And then that becomes, well, how do you get from here to there is an important question, and something that we're calling on people to come to mass organizing conferences on August 19th to actually develop such plans and to input a lot of ideas.
Mm-hmm. And let me jump into this, because I think this actually flows from what you're saying. This is, you gave this speech at this conference just recently, and people can access it at revcom.us as well as at refusefascism.org. One of the things that's really struck me in this is actually a problem that you talk about that actually is something that I've been thinking about myself. One of the things with people now, they're the necessary engine to do what we're talking about doing. At the same time, they themselves don't recognize how important the role they have to play actually is. So that's a contradiction that's rubbing very hard right now, and it has to be broken through on if this is ever to go where it needs to go.
Yeah, well, this is what we're up against. For decades now, people have come to view politics as something that's taken care of for them, broadly speaking. In fact, most people actually don't get all that involved. Maybe they go vote every 4 years. In fact, most people don't even vote. But it's something that gets taken care of for them. And then as they do get activated, as we saw during the presidential primaries, particularly, you know, a section of progressive people got behind Bernie Sanders, and they got involved in seeking redress from the problems they saw in society in that kind of way, the inequality and all of this. And so people have normal ways that they've tried to resolve problems, including protests, as usual, which is they have a deep belief that if they simply speak truth to power, then power will accede eventually to their demand, which is actually, even in normal times, is pretty much illusory, except in rare occasions when there's a ferocious enough struggle, and that's in the interest of one or another section of ruling powers. But be that as it may, we're up against the situation that Donald Trump is decidedly not normal. This is a very abnormal situation, and abnormal in its content, in that it is a fascist regime, in addition to the fact that he's kind of an abnormal character, which is all that the media will focus your attention on, the buffoonery, the insanity of it, the narcissism and all this, all of which are actually somewhat characteristic of most fascist leaders. But nonetheless, he's a definitely peculiar would be an understatement for describing this creature. But nonetheless, the essence of it is that this is a fascist regime. And so you have to break out of the norms. And one of the problems we face is that the Democrats and their offshoots all the way down the line keep wanting to raise opposition in normal ways. It gets absurd. You read a Thomas Friedman or different people there advise him as to how to be normal. The Democrats' program is normalcy. And you're not going to fight something abnormal in the normal kind of way. And at the same time, there's a second set of problems, which I just described before this, that people are used to protesting in normal ways. And what's required here is something that's decidedly different, creating the kind of thing, like you mentioned, Tahrir Square. There's what happened in the Ukraine. There's what happened in South Korea. There's the kind of society-wide
tumult that, while not directed against the removal of the regime, it was part of, or the presidency, and during the 60s, and then in the early 70s against Nixon, 60s with Johnson. Although I will say the protests in the street around the war and the black liberation struggle, civil rights struggle, student movement, cultural revolution did lead to a situation where Johnson felt he couldn't, particularly around Vietnam, felt he couldn't run again. So these are the kinds of things that we actually have to break through what have been decades of domestication, if you will, of protest movements and of struggle, to one where people sense the extremeness of the situation, where they're actually objectively up against extremeness, and then themselves take a kind of action that they've never done before, which for a lot of people, tens of thousands and then hundreds of thousands of millions, would mean putting their lives on hold and getting out in the street every night or every day, depending on what shift they work in. Many other people staying day and night. So this is the kind of thing that's going to be required if we're going to get anything, a positive resolution to a regime that is fast installing a fascist regime in this country, mm-hmm. which would have tremendous repercussions for the people of the world, which is why we raise the slogan, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America.
Mm-hmm. I want to go to this, though, first. You know, there's a point that you've raised in this talk you gave. You said that only refused fascism has a plan for driving out the whole regime. What's the importance of this, and why were you getting at that, and what's the importance of it?
Well, one, it's true. There is nobody else putting forward a plan for getting rid of the whole regime. There are, and it's very important to unite with, and we wholeheartedly unite with people who are waging struggles against this, many different aspects of the regime. Some, there's an impeachment movement, all of which are part of the mix. The problem is twofold. One is the fact that it is a regime, that it's not just Donald Trump, but it's Mike Pence, who's a leader of a Christian fascist movement in this country, a guy who believes in the Bible taken literally. He's a theocrat. And then right down the line, every single department, including Trump's advisors, are people who are changing the norms of how society would be governed. And whatever our thinking about those norms, my own being that the norms of this society are things that need to and could be superseded in a whole radically different kind of society. Nonetheless, that's what Trump is doing. So this is the kind of thing that we're trying to actually break through on, for people to see that only their actions in their millions, ultimately, beginning with thousands and tens of thousands, can actually resolve this. And no other organization has that as their program. A lot of times you say, well, what are you going to do? Is that impeachment? Are you talking about the 25th Amendment? What's the procedure? And they're missing the point. They will find a way to deal with this if they're forced to deal with it, they being the people in power or factions of the people in power. In other words, Nixon faced impeachment and then actually did resign facing the certainty of an impeachment. His vice president had already been removed from office. There are ways that this stuff happens and can happen if there's a large enough crisis. And that crisis has to be coming from below, because if it's not, it will be resolved in ways that are not helpful to the masses of people, such as an impeachment where Mike Pence becomes president and the basic message from all factions of the ruling powers and the media is good. Now we can get back to normalcy, since they focused only on Trump's buffoonery. But Mike Pence as a normal president would be a horror for humanity. So we've had to really work hard to come up with a program that, yes, it's the difficult way. It's the hardest thing we could do, but it's the only possible solution that would be in the interest of humanity, which is now very sharply posed with Trump's bellicose and outrageous remarks in relationship to North Korea.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you want to talk about war crimes, there's a huge just waddling down the street on that one. Let me ask you this, and I'm kind of rushing to, because I do want to give people a chance to talk about some things. But why November 4th? I mean, it seems like we're like in the middle of August right now, and you're talking about gearing up for something that's happening November 4th. What's the significance of November 4th?
Well, I mean, in one sense, it's arbitrary. It's no holiday or a special day, but it will be 1 year since the election a couple days later. We didn't just pick that to coincide with the anniversary, although it's a convenient fact. Why November 4th is because to go from where the movements of opposition are now to where they would need to be to even launch such a thing is going to take some time. And even the 11 or so weeks we would have between now and then is an extremely short time, which is why we're giving a lot of importance to these organizing meetings or regional conferences on the 19th of August. But it's also, if you would stop and think about, well, how much later could it be? You know, we've produced these giant indictments of the regime. They're indictments of the regime with many, many facts in them. And there, some of them are enlarged to, be 5, 6, 8 feet high, and others are in scroll form, booklet form. But if you look at what they've already done and what they could do, if you wait too long, two things happen. One, there's a window that could close on the rights of the people to protest, which already is they've instituted and inspired in states across the country a lot of draconian measures, which make the penalty for protest and the power of the state such that it will be much more difficult for people to fight should they actually shut things down. You could imagine if a war goes down with North Korea, they could declare a state of emergency, and then what could be put in place? We saw some of this after 9/11, and all of that's still in place, so build on top of that. And the second thing is, as time goes on, people become more and more accommodated to the regime. They find their place within it.
I'm going to read something. It's two paragraphs he read from the website of the Revolutionary Communist Party, revcom.us. And the paragraphs are, "The Democrats, along with the New York Times and the Washington Post, etc., are seeking to resolve the crisis with the Trump presidency on the terms of this system and in the interest of the ruling class of this system, which they represent. We, the masses of people, must go all out and mobilize ourselves in the millions to resolve this in our interests and in the interests of humanity, which are fundamentally different from and opposed to those of the ruling class. This, of course, does not mean that the struggle among the powers that be is irrelevant or unimportant. Rather, the way to understand and approach this, and this is a point that must also be repeatedly driven home to people, including through necessary struggle waged well, is in terms of how it relates to and what openings it can provide for the struggle from below, for the mobilization of masses of people around the demand that the whole regime must go because of its fascist nature and the actions and what the stakes are for humanity."
Those two paragraphs, which are from the website revcom.us, are, again, people don't have to agree. I cited them saying that, look, there's an analysis of the system in there and the nature of it. There is a ruling class that people who get involved with refuse fascism do not have to agree with. And many will not share that and do not share that point of view. But nonetheless, they're still very illustrative of what we're talking about, that which is that the powers that be are not going to resolve the situation of the Trump regime in the interest of the people, even as a key, target or object of the Trump regime is to totally sweep to the side the Democratic Party, those Republicans, the mainstream, the fake news. They are going up against what has been the norms of what, as a revolutionary, I'd call the bourgeois democratic norms of society, which does mean a really oppressive conditions, murder of Black and Latino people, mass incarceration, hunger among a quarter of our youth, all kinds of things that your listeners are well aware of. But this is a qualitative change because that's where they're coming from. Their opposition is coming from. Even as they're being opposed by Trump, they will not resolve this in a positive way. You can see that in their response to even his threats on North Korea, where they argue that, well, his words are over the top, but actually, we really do have to curtail these people. They see their interests as imperial interests. After all, it was the Democratic Party, Harry Truman, who prosecuted a brutal war crime against the North Korean people, murdering over 3 million people. And frankly, that war still isn't over officially. It's just an armistice. And I don't want to back into a whole discussion of that, but just to say, as horrific as that North Korean regime is, nothing in common with socialism or revolution. Nonetheless, it is their country and they have a right to exist, and the U.S.'s actions in relationship to it are nothing other than predatory and should be opposed by people of the world. And this is going to create an unbelievable disaster for people. But the second half of those two paragraphs is saying that the conflicts that exist among the ruling class, then you can see them now. They're very, very sharp. Take some expression in these congressional hearings, the special prosecutor of Mueller, that these are vehicles through which, if there is struggle from below, they provide some openings for that struggle from below to put forward our demand that the whole regime must go. So those are important paragraphs that I think even those who don't agree with the full analysis can recognize, that we should not stand aside from those struggles, but actually be seeing them as a way that could open up space for the people themselves to break through.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back, so stay tuned.
1, 2, 3. now, sisters and brothers, because if you do, you can hear their voices still calling across the years. And they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will too, we all come to understand. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us are chained. None of us are free.
All right, welcome back. That's Solomon Burke with None of Us Are Free. Very appropriate for what we're talking about today.
Now we'll continue with Andy Z and the first of a few callers. Remember, this show is pre-recorded, and you cannot call into your local station now.
First up, you have John, and John is his comments that he made when he called in were about the background on the fascist regime. So, John, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for the show. This is awesome. We have to get this united front against fascism stronger and stronger, and you all are moving in the right direction for November to do this. Let's go back to the 30s. This country has been borrowing money since 1933, borrowing money from the central banks of the world since 1933. They used it to defeat what they called defeat Hitler in 1944. They brought all those Nazis over here in 1944, Operation Paperclip. Then they put Project Monarch in place, mind control, in 1948. So they've been doing this a long time, setting this up a long time. And if we don't get our history straight, if we don't understand that this country is working and living on borrowed money and borrowed time, it's all going to be over very soon. By the 21st of this month, they're going to send jets up. They're rounding up the military all around the country. I'm finding out this information every day. They are setting up, and not just a coup, but a major coup coming up. And this insane clown president is acting like, just like Adolf was doing in the 30s, talking about, oh, they're beating up Germany, oh, this Germany's Germany, Germany. And the next thing you know, they're dropping bombs, just like Harry Truman dropped two atomic bombs on the Christian islands of Japan. So, folks, you better wake up to your story.
All right, John, thanks a lot. We'll let Andy speak to that. Take care, man. Andy?
Well, I think the question of people waking up is really important. I think it's important for people to look into the actual history of things. I think there's a bigger question that John raised over what is the problem with the system, the borrowing that has been done at the federal level, or is the problem with the nature of the system itself, which involves things like debt, but actually is much more profound in terms of it's a system based on exploitation and oppression. But I think those are bigger discussions as to what is the root cause of the problems that we face, and people should look into the history. In terms of there being a coup d'etat, I think you've actually already seen it in terms of an election that elected a fascist regime to this country. And indeed, one thing that is a parallel with Nazi Germany is that, you know, Hitler's party came to power through elections. It's a different system. It was a parliamentary system. The Nazis became a very large part of the Reichstag, which was their Congress. And then they had a system for appointing chancellors. It's longer than I want to take the time to go into now. But the most important point to grasp about this is that, one, in both situations, the fascist leader came to power through democratic means, which is through the means of using elections, such as they were in the differences between the two countries. And in both countries, conservatives and other reactionary elements, but who were not fascists, thought that they could control Hitler in Germany, just as there are fascistic elements in the Republican Party and actually throughout the state structures that believe they can control Donald Trump, and they're going to find out, just as they did in Germany, that they're the ones who are being played, and that with development of a fascist movement in this country over many decades, and with the instruments of state power in its hands, that indeed we'll see that if we don't act, this fascism will be installed. If people want to get more into the history of the particularity of the development of the fascist movements in this country, I recommend a piece by Bob Avakian, who, as I said before, develop a new synthesis of communism, a new communism. It's called The Right-Wing Conspiracy and Why Clinton, speaking of Bill Clinton at the time, and the Democrats Are No Answer, which goes into a very sharp analysis of the development over several decades of this Christian fascism, which is the very large aspect of the Trump regime, even as he himself is quite obviously not one, but he has made a coalition and an agreement and with Mike Pence and the Christian fascists to be able to institute this new politics in this country.
And I wanted to let you know, an 80-year-old woman called, and she said she can't go on the air right now, but she really wants to come to the 19th, and she said she's ready. Pence and Trump must both go.
And I'm speaking with Andy Z, co-initiator of Refuse Fascism.
We're talking about the upcoming November 4th, 2017, take to the streets and public squares in cities and towns across the country, continuing day after day and night after night, not stopping till our demand is met. No, this nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America.
So, Andy, you had a comment you wanted to share. Go ahead.
If you think about what it would be for thousands of people becoming tens of thousands and then hundreds of thousands very quickly in cities, refusing to go day after day, night after night, that would be the big story. That would be dominating the news if they attempted to suppress it. And people came back the next day. That would make it even a stronger story. And the single demand that the whole regime must go, it's illegitimate. And not just because this guy's a lunatic and got crazy orange hair and this and that and is vulgar and governs by tweets, but the fact of their actual program, and that was put forward. Then there are every faction of power in this country would have to pay attention. Many would denounce, some would demur, and others would see that there are ways that they could utilize this for their own ends, and it would start to sharpen things up. And that is actually how things change. If you look at any fundamental change in this country or any other country ruled by this system, it's only come when masses and masses of people have taken to the streets and over the central issue, which is that the regime must go. That is actually why it could happen. You can see extremely sharp contradictions already between different ruling factions. But if you inject it into that, and what was dominating thing are the demands of the people, and it's not just saying they should go, but we've got a tremendous indictment over every key issue that this regime is doing, from how they're treating Black and Latino people, women, LGBTQ people, Native Americans, to the environment, the question of war, and most importantly, the fascist nature of how their governing norms are going to be pursued. All of these things together, that becomes the story, and then that becomes, and it's the refusal to move and the continuing over weeks and months, potentially, that then gives the potential to open up avenues for changing things.
All right, Andy, let's hear from Kay next. And Kay talks about, since 9/11, the U.S. has killed millions of people. Let's talk about this. Mm-hmm. Kay, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. What I want to know is, when, since 9/11, at least 2 million people, 5 countries been destroyed, 20 million people, refugees. Nobody ever talked about it. Nobody ever tried to remove Obama, which destroyed 3 countries, Yemen, Syria, and Libya. Libya was one of the best African countries. Well-run, good education system, free health care, and all of a sudden, you know, it's not a Trump, it's the system. It doesn't matter. Anybody could be more diverse, more different than Obama. He created the ISIS. He's the one who armed them. He's the one who financed them. And nobody talked about it. All, now all of a sudden, Trump. This guy is lunatic, no doubt about it. But the system has to be changed.
You want to speak to that, Andy?
Well, let me mention, yeah, I'm sorry, his name is Kay, is that?
Kay's his name, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Look, you raise an important point in terms of the nature of the system. You see, I think what we have to see now is that we face a particular danger in the nature of a fascist regime that makes struggle for a radically different world, which is what you're talking about, getting rid of this system that has done so much harm to the masses of people. And, I personally would agree with you that Obama's done tremendous harm to the people of the world and, frankly, to people in this country, including Black people himself. That's a big discussion that we could have, need to have, and in the context of fighting to drive this regime out, we need to be having those conversations on a societal level. A lot of things need to be debated out. There is not a basis right now to call for or to begin working for a revolution in this country. That is not what's on the minds of millions of people right now. Not to say that couldn't happen. There's people like the Revolutionary Communist Party that are preparing for such a time in the future when that could become possible, and that future may not be that far off. But right now, the task is to actually drive out this regime. Now, in terms of some of the things you spoke about, you're absolutely right of what, in the international arena, what the Obama administration did and got away with. But I will say this, that right now that Yemen, you mentioned, has been hit by more U.S. airstrikes in the last 6 months than in all of 2015 and 2016 combined. The civilian casualties have dramatically increased throughout the Mideast, which is not to say that the previous casualty figures and bombing was okay. It's not okay. But it is to get a handle on what is in the offing with this regime and why it has to be stopped and why that would create a situation to make any future struggle far more difficult. So I think that's some of the things that we need to actually understand, the nature of what we're fighting and why it must be defeated. And from a revolutionary point of view, the defeat of and the removal of Trump and Pence from power is a stage that revolution has to go through. And so that is how we are viewing. If you want to read more about that, I would suggest you go to revcom.us and read an article called Some Strategic Points on the Current Situation.
All right.
I will.
We have about maybe six and a half minutes left, something like that. What I want to do is try and thank people for calling, and I also want to try and basically hit a couple of places right now, a couple of questions. John asked, how do we organize stuff, which is a very important question given what we're talking about going up into now. Another John also asked, I don't know if he asked or he was saying, they can be removed or we can remove them through the system, which actually is, I think, something that you spoke to earlier in the discussion we were having. But maybe if we hit those two, and if we can do that in a few minutes and we can get a couple more in, that'd be good.
Well, let me just make one point as a segue into both questions, which is because a lot of your callers so far have come in with varying critiques, some of which I agree with, and a lot of which I agree with where their desires are for really radical systemic change. And the point I was just making is in the course of this struggle, there needs to be a lot of discussion over different ways forward. There needs to be a whole different societal discussion of what kind of world do people want to live in? How could it be achieved? In our call for November 4th, we say our actions will reflect the values of respect for all of humanity in the world we want, in stark contrast to the hate and bigotry of the Trump-Pence fascist regime. We need very broad unity. We cannot allow the ruling forces of this society or anybody else to divide us up and pit us against each other. We can't have a divide and conquer way of approaching things. This is a time when people do need to unite very broadly. Everyone who can be united from many different perspectives and viewpoints around the great unifying objective of driving this regime out through massive and sustained political mobilization against this regime, which is doing such tremendous harm. And so that, in terms of segueing into your first questioners, how do we organize for it? One thing is to keep that principle in mind. Two, we have to put in front of people this actual demand and the stand that it comes from. In other words, it says we have to drive out this regime because it's going to give us this or that benefit. We're doing it in the interest of all humanity. That's why we refuse to accept the fascist America. Okay? Putting these demands before people and the fact that there's a plan and a date gives people a way to measure up what's going on in the world with what people are and are not doing and what needs to be done. Three, we are getting out over the next period of time the actual facts about this. People do not know the extent, the scale and scope of what's been done. And Refuse Fascism has produced these incredible fact sheets, indictment sheets, and that are huge posters. These need to get everywhere. And next, and probably most important in terms of organizing people into this, we need to learn and have put forward that we want to learn from the approach of ACT UP in the early 90s, where we have to go out and take actions that are essentially very sharp actions, but that bring out the truth and put the truth of what the people want and desire and the kind of world they want up against what the regime is doing. And in a certain sense, the things that shock the conscience of what this regime has done and is doing need to be sort of forced into the public discourse. And it's just so annoying. It's not annoying. It's far worse than that to watch the news when they literally have a man talking about unleashing a nuclear war against North Korea, or even if it's not nuclear, bringing fire and fury in an illegitimate war, to listen to talking heads talk about how this plays out in Democrat and Republican policies and not to be talking about humanity. We have to force the reality of what this represents and what this regime is doing out into the open, and that can only happen through taking very bold actions, and people have done this. Anywhere these fascists go, this regime goes, there should be people out there putting the truth right in front of them. And it's great that, you know, people like Indivisible went out there around the health bill. But we need to be not just around each particular, but we need to nail them on the particulars of literally consigning people to die of preventable diseases by taking away their insurance, but actually be raising the demand that the whole regime has to go, because that's the only way to stop it. Because every single day they come out with one or two or three or even a half dozen new measures. So that's on the organizing, Michael. And on the question of can we remove the regime under this system, yeah, we can. That's why we're proposing it. Otherwise, we wouldn't propose it. One thing we'll say is that he's not going to be removed, most likely, without this struggle. But if he was through some inner ruling class kind of struggle, it wouldn't be actually end up being good for the people, because the result would not be coming from the needs of the people and the desires of the people, but from the interests of one or another faction in the ruling class. So be sure it can be done. This is not a call for revolution. This is not replacing the whole system. As much as many of us would like that, that's not what this is. Although I will say this, it'd be very difficult to get to that world if you had a full-out fascist regime. Your struggle would be far more complex, not impossible, but much more complex.
Mm-hmm. All right, Andy, we have a whole board full of calls, and I'd really like to, I wish I was able to get to all of them, but we can't because we are running out of time. But any closing comments in like a minute or less?
Look, every question people have about this is important to raise. But the most important thing for people to think about is what this regime has actually done, that it is doing, it is what we say it is. And we have to find the ways now for people to unite and come together in the kind of struggle that we've called for on November 4th, without any form of sectarianism or pitting one group against another. We need to actually, one section of the people, we need to come together now and drive this regime out. That's what advances every aspect of the people's struggle, whether it be for clean water, the environment, for women to have the right to reproductive care, for LGBTQ people to have the right to be treated as full human beings, and this is being snatched away by this regime, to not waging war on the world. And I'm sure I've left out a few things, and to living in a society where at least dissent is still possible. And this is what has to happen right now.
All right, we've got to wrap up, Andy.
refusefascism.org, and for a deeper analysis of this and a revolutionary perspective, which some of your listeners have advocated, they should go to revcom.us.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. We'll have you back again soon, Andy.
Take care.
Bye now. All right. You've been listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've been talking today with Andy Z, talking about what's going to happen on November 4th, all right, and the build-up to that and after that, all right? So that's what we've been talking about. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, my board offer today, Kiki Kiana, there she is, and I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com, and we're listening to Dr. John right now, and we ought to listen to him a lot more, all right? So talk to you again next week. Rebellion.